the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking level, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Howdy, folks. Major Fedlocks here. I knew old Gramps was oh so wise as I looked at him with big round eyes, and I said to him, despite my tries, I just cannot spell sheep. Gramps said, that word's a breeze. You can spell it now with ease, cause there's a shortcut, yes siree, an S-M-A-G-A, sheep.
Oh. Okay.
The next day I was quite perplexed. A new word really had me vexed. So of all my questions, this was next. Gramps, how do you spell losers? Gramps said, that word's a breeze. You can spell that word with ease, cause there's a shortcut, yes siree, and that's M-A-G-A, losers.
Okay.
The next time me and Grandpa met, I was curious what reply I'd get when I asked about the most complex word yet. Gramps, how do you spell traitorous? Gramps said, heck, that word's a breeze. You can spell it now with ease, cause there's a shortcut, yes siree, and that's M-A-G-A, traitorous. Gramps may not be a genius, but he seemed like one to me. And yet still, his spelling of hard words seemed as sketchy as can be. So I thought I'd do a little test to determine for myself, by giving him a word I already knew how to spell. I then asked Gramps to tell me true, I'll admit this one's slightly blue. And what he told me, I'll now tell you. Gramps, how do you spell dumbass? My grandpa smiled in a thoughtful way. I believed he'd say M-A-G-A.
Uh-huh.
But the answer he gave me was T-R-U-M-P.
Okay, well, that worked.
Thanks for listening.
Are you a multi?
Oh, whoa, I thought I was, I guess I have the Howie page up. I was going to just give Mangy Fetlocks a little bit of applause. I didn't change the settings from Thursday of last week, apparently. It's Monday. God, it's fucking Monday. Okay, new addition to the thing. Tomorrow's Super Tuesday. I don't know if Arizona is part of Super Tuesday or not. I do know that we got our presidential preference ballots in the mail and filled them out. Thus, my Maricopa County I voted sticker. First time voting in Arizona. So we did that. And tomorrow is Super Tuesday. 15 or 16 states. I guess we're not paying that much attention because, you know, there's not a whole lot of competition on either side, unfortunately. So it is what it is. And let's just get through primary season and let's get to the general election already. But we do have until November, and that is 8 months away, which is an eternity in political world. Anything can happen in 8 months. But we did get an answer to a question this morning, and it wasn't the one we wanted, but it was probably the one that most of us expected. The Extreme Court, yeah, that's their new name. They're not supreme at all. They are extreme. And they came back with a unanimous decision saying that the former guy can remain on primary ballots, or another way to put it, said that states do not have the power to remove Trump from the ballot. So And it was unanimous. And at first blush, we're all going, what? Unanimous? What? But here's what happened. The three so-called liberal justices who agreed with them didn't really, what they said was, and I'm paraphrasing, and let me right now promote that Lisa Graves will be here tomorrow. So we will get much more into what the court said in this ruling today, because I don't even play a lawyer on the radio. I'm not a lawyer. So Lisa Graves is our legal authority, and she will be here tomorrow to talk about this and all other legal issues that arise. And there are plenty of them, you know, in the pipeline for the former guy. But basically what I can take from what happened this morning is that, you know, the three not Trumpers on the court, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson, said that whether or not Trump should be on the ballot, it is not for them to decide here, that it can't be a state-by-state sort of piecemeal patchwork thing. They didn't say that the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment didn't hold here, but said that if it is self-executing, then Congress must act. It's not a question for the courts, and it's certainly not a question for individual states. Now, that was my impression of what they said. And if you have a different idea, you know, you feel free to call in. 954-889-6410 is the phone number. This first, you know, until our guest gets here, I'm happy to take calls. And if you think I got something wrong, tell me. But that's my take on it. In fact, a few other people waited. Did I bring any of the explanations here? Let's see. Yeah, Jamie Raskin. All right. No better congressional authority, in my view, of the Constitution than Jamie Raskin. In case you don't know, Jamie Raskin was a constitutional law professor before he went into Congress. So first of all, here is Jamie Raskin on August 27th talking about the 14th Amendment, Section 3, and how it disqualifies Trump.
We've been saying all along that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment presents a clear and unequivocal statement that anyone who has sworn an oath of office, and by the way, not just a president, but members of Congress and others who hold federal office, who engage in insurrection or rebellion, having sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, can never serve again in federal or state office.
Donald Trump is disqualified. So that was Jamie Raskin again back in August of last year saying he shouldn't be on the ballot. Well, this morning he was on, I don't know, one of the cable so-called news shows. And they said, well, the Supreme Court disagreed with you, huh? And here's how Jamie Raskin answered that.
Well, the court didn't exactly disagree with it. They just said that they're not the ones to figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a matter for judicial resolution under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, but it's up to Congress to enforce it. You know, I disagree with that interpretation just because the other parts of the 14th Amendment are self-executing. People can go to court and say that something violates equal protection, even if there's not a federal statute that allows them to do that. But in any event, the Supreme Court punted and said it's up to Congress to act. And so I am working with a number of my colleagues, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Eric Swalwell, to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And the House of Representatives already impeached Donald Trump for participating in insurrection by inciting it. So the House has already pronounced upon that, and there was also a 57-43 vote in the Senate. The question is whether Speaker Mike Johnson would allow us to bring this to the floor of the House.
And the question is whether Speaker Mike Johnson would allow them to bring that to the floor of the House. Yes, David.
So make believe that this is a call. Ring, ring, ring.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Nicole.
Yes.
This is David.
Yeah.
Calling in from the other room.
Anyway, well, you're in this room, but okay.
So whatever. Does this ruling, and obviously you're not Lisa, so maybe ask her this, but does this ruling not take away from the states the ability to control their own elections, which the states are supposed to do individually? Does this not open a bit of a Pandora's box here? Because if the Supreme Extreme Court is saying the states do not have the right to kick someone off the ballot, what else do they not have the right to do according to the Extreme Court? Previous to this, they were able to run their own elections the way that they saw fit. So yeah. I'm just wondering.
I don't know the answer to that.
As Fucker Carlson would say, I'm just asking questions.
Uh-huh. We will ask Lisa Grave that tomorrow. It's a sort of important, good timing, I think, on my producer's behalf to book Lisa Graves to be here tomorrow. We've got a lot of questions for Lisa. I don't know. Thomas Garrett in the chat room asks, is SCOTUS compromised by Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society? I think you've got the right idea there. So there's Jamie Raskin. I don't know. Keith Olbermann apparently was pissed. Now, you know, Keith these days, I guess he's relegated to the same status I have. He's doing he yells on Shitter and he, you know, yells on YouTube. But what he tweeted or shitted, as the case may be, the Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the, quote, court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. Okay, so that's Keith Olbermann. And, you know, he got a lot of pushback, as you would expect, especially as Shitter is constituted these days with a lot of maggots. So somebody, one of the trolls responded to him, cry more. And and Keith Olbermann, in all of his, you know, seriousness, said, those aren't tears, fascist. They're urine. I'm sure you enjoy being bathed in it. I'm not sure what that means, but that's a retort for you. Retort, as the case may be. Someone else said, Keith, this comeback doesn't make any sense. It implies you're pissing on yourself. I don't know. Again, I'm not a legal expert, so I couldn't really tell you. It's just, it's better not to feed the trolls. I just use the block button. Yes, I'm still on the Shitter. And I block people left and right. You know, Jonathan Larson's coming up in just a little while. Jonathan Larson is the proprietor of the fucking news. It's why we do the fucking news every Monday. And, you know, if you don't subscribe to the fucking news.substack.com, what are you waiting for? There is a free version. In fact, Jonathan works the way I do. He's not behind a paywall, but he really could use your support. You know, I say because I come from radio. I work on the public radio model. So it goes over the airwaves. In this case, it goes out over the interwebs. I don't run commercials, nor does he. I don't charge you an entry fee. I don't put up a paywall. But if you can afford it and enjoy the content, we hope you'll support the work. And that's how Jonathan operates the fucking news. By the way, it's how Marcy Wheeler operates emptywheel.net as well. You notice the theme here? All right. Very few things in life are free these days or on the honor system, but we all are. Anyway, Jonathan, in today's The Fucking News Substack letter, he wrote, I love his take on things. He said, the Supreme Court has ruled on the Colorado 14-3 case that the guy who incited insurrection can remain on the ballot. Then he says, this must be challenged by everyone who calls America home. The American people are not fools. We saw and heard former guy incite his followers and then look away as harm befell officers defending Congress. Trump attempted to silence voters by stealing their votes. And then he said, it might seem like common sense that when a person commits an insurrection or a treasonous act on our community, state, or nation, that said person should be disqualified from running for any local, state, or federal public office. You think? However, we are a nation ruled by laws, not common sense. God forbid. And we must advocate for appealing the recent ruling in the Supreme Court and champion laws that protect our communities. That makes sense, a lot of sense. So we'll talk with Jonathan about this, but more importantly, one thing that he's been working on over at the fucking news is some original, exclusive reporting on the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. And so I'm just going to save that for him to explain, because you don't want me to explain it to you. I will tell you some other things that are going on in the news. First of all, this week, I already mentioned tomorrow is Super Tuesday. By the way, Nikki Haley won her first primary last night in Washington, D.C. Now, it wasn't many votes, but, you know, it was something like, she got 1,200 votes, and I'm serious. Those are like the numbers. There weren't many people who voted. 1,200 votes to Dump's 600. So she did a lot better than he did. This might turn on its head Trump's theory that his multiple indictments and his ugly, garish sneakers are providing him a connection with the African-American community. Just think about how stupid that is. And when we talk about stupid, you know, he apparently was on the stump a lot this week. Now, again, I don't watch his stuff. Frankly, most weekends, I do anything I can to get as far away from the news as possible. It's my revitalization time. I get to regroup from the week and rest up and clear my mind and purge the news until Monday morning when I have to jump in all over again. But then I do, and I see all these clips. So the orange guy, whose hair is really orange now, only his hairdresser knows for sure, I guess. Anyway, he said a lot of things this weekend without actually saying anything. So I pulled some clips from some. There are a bunch of like compilation videos out there of, you know, the incongruity, because all we hear from the media, especially the New York Times, is, wait, brace yourself. Are you sitting? Joe Biden is old. I know. Who knew? He's old and he stutters. I wouldn't know without the New York Times. But they don't tell us that Donald Trump is out of his fucking mind.
We're getting rid of the Romneys of the world. We want to get Romneys and those out. But they know that we are the only ones who can stop them. We're the only ones. This is the greatest movement in the history of our country, maybe in the history of any country, even Argentina. They went MAGA. You know Argentina, great guy. He's a big Trump guy. He loves Trump.
Wait, Argentina, great guy? He's a big Trump guy, loves Trump.
What? I love him because he loves Trump. When he called, I took his call. Anybody that loves me, I like them.
Okay, there's just so much there. First of all, Romneys, getting rid of the Romneys. I guess that's a Ronna McDaniel dig, is all I can think. And then Argentina, he's a great guy. And when he called, I take his call. Because anybody who loves Trump, that we knew. All you have to do to get Trump to like you is profess your love for him. But Argentina, is there somebody named Argentina? What about Venezuela?
In Venezuela, did you just see Maduro? Venezuela, it's unbelievable.
What? Venezuela, unbelievable? We got to hear that again.
In Venezuela, did you just see Maduro? Venezuela, it's unbelievable.
That wasn't edited. That's how it came out of his mouth. But wait, there's more.
I said, Abdul, he's still there. He's the head of the Taliban. He said, you're killing us all. Just don't do it anymore because terror will rain down on you.
Oh. And
he called you, yes, Your Highness. He called
Your
Highness, which is interesting.
That's another way to get Trump to like you. Call him Your Highness because he thinks he's the king. and Abdul, the head of the Taliban, good friend of mine, because he likes me. Anybody who likes Trump, I like them. And he called me Your Highness. Wait, there's more.
We are a nation that just recently heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will repeat.
That Saudi Arabia and Russia. Did he just die? It sounded like the death, last gasp of air. Sorry about the music back there. I couldn't get rid of it, but what?
We are a nation that just recently heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will repeat.
Okay, there's Donald Trump for you. I can't wait for the debate. But you know, it's not only Trump. So, you know, look, he's got the words, the best words. Apparently, Joni Ernst. Do you remember Joni Ernst with the helmet hair and the one who castrates pigs? Maybe instead of castrating so many pigs, she should have spent more time in vocabulary class. What was it? Joe Biden is set to deliver the State of the Union address on Thursday night, a little later than usual. It usually isn't, I think, in February, but it's okay. Thursday is March, 7th, 8th, something like that. I don't have the calendar. Let's see. Thursday is, it doesn't want to show me. Bastard. Okay, Thursday is the 7th. Okay, I should trust myself once in a while. So Thursday is the 7th, and that's when he's going to be delivering the State of the Union. And the way it works, the president gets an invitation from the Speaker of the House to address a joint session of Congress. That's what the State of the Union is. It's a formality that they do this. Well, now, see if you can follow this convoluted logic. The House Republicans, which is an oxymoron in and of itself, but put that aside for a second. The House Republicans have decided that the deal, the border deal, in which Joe Biden negotiated exactly what they wanted, what they've been screaming for years now, a really tough border security bill Meeker Speaker Johnson said he would not even bring to the floor for a vote. And then they went ahead and impeached the Homeland Security chief because they didn't get this bill passed that they wouldn't bring to the floor for a vote. And now, since they don't have a policy, again, because the House didn't bring it up for a vote, if they had brought it up for a vote, it would have passed. Just between you and me, it would have passed. But they didn't. So they couldn't, right? So now there's a move afoot by these Republicans to stop the State of the Union address. They want to keep the president from addressing a joint session of Congress, to which he has already been invited, and that's just a mere formality anyway. But here's Joni Ernst on one of the so-called cable news shows.
It is unfathomable that we do not have a national security strategy from the president, nor do we have his budget for the upcoming fiscal year. And because of that, we want to stop him from actually delivering the State of the Union.
I'm sorry, it's ridiculous, they want to stop him from delivering the State of the Union. But my mind goes to other things. What do you think it is, Joni Ernst? It's what? Say that again.
It is unfathomable.
Yes, it's what you thought she said. She said
unfathomable.
Unfathomable? It's the word is unfathomable. She doesn't know that. It's because she put Wonder Bread bags over her feet because her family couldn't afford rubbers. I'm not making that up. She said, and she used to walk to school with the Wonder Bread bags over her shoes so her shoes didn't get wet in the puddles because they couldn't afford rubbers, obviously, because she was born. Sorry, unfathomable.
Unfathomable.
Okay. She must be listening to this guy.
Because everybody I speak to says how horrible it is. Nobody explained to me how allowing millions of people from places unknown, from countries unknown,
what?
who don't speak languages. We have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages. They're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them.
I don't even know where to go with that. Do they use words like unfathomable in those languages? Wait, say that again, Donald, because this is just too good.
Because everybody I speak to says how horrible it is. Nobody can explain to me how allowing millions of people from places unknown
From places unknown, languages, speaking languages nobody knows.
From countries unknown.
Countries unknown.
We don't speak languages. We have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages.
Nobody speaks the languages, but they're coming into our country.
Languages, they're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them.
It's unfathomable. We should go back to the Mangy Fetlock song. Oh, my God. I just don't. It's unfathomable. You know what else is unfathomable? Did you hear how Trump explained his first primary loss to Nikki Haley? He said, wait, I thought I had it here. Hold on. I got to get you the direct quote because, you know, Trump never loses. Here's what he said. Where is it now? Okay. I got to do the voice. It starts with a sniff. I purposely stayed away from the D.C. vote because it is the swamp with very few delegates and no upside. Bird Brain spent all of her time, money, and effort there. Over the weekend, we won Missouri, Idaho, and Michigan. Big numbers. Complete destruction of a very weak opponent. Those really big numbers will come on Super Tuesday. Also, way up on Crooked Joe. You know what that is, don't you?
Unfathomable.
It's just unfathomable. Oh, my God. I don't know what to do. Oh, there was other news that I can't wait for Friday. Now, on Monday, I always say I can't wait for Friday because, well, the obvious. But remember the name Alan Weisselberg? Alan Weisselberg, the chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, pled guilty to perjury charges today. The perjury charges mark the latest legal peril for Alan Weisselberg, who in recent years pleaded guilty to multiple felonies, including grand larceny and criminal tax fraud. He served months behind bars and was penalized $1 million in a civil fraud trial. But apparently, he's out and about. And you know what I think that is?
Unfathomable.
Unfathomable. It's just unfathomable. Joni, less time castrating pigs, more time learning the language. I know it's one of those languages that nobody knows.
Because everybody I speak to says how horrible it is. Nobody can explain to me how allowing millions of people from places unknown, from countries unknown. Who don't speak languages.
They
we have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages.
Nobody.
They're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them.
Nobody speaks them except for people who say unfathomable. Unfathomable.
It's time for the fucking news from NicoleSandler.com.
And Jonathan Larson at thefuckingnews.substack.com.
He said a very bad word.
Oh, the language on you.
You're a fucking newsman.
The fucking news.
It's time for the fucking news. I love the evil laugh. Jonathan Larson is here from the fucking news. Did you catch the unfathomable as well?
I came in right on the soundbite. I came in early enough to fathom it. How's that?
You did fathom it. As long as you can fathom it. See, we have languages that at least a couple of people speak.
We have languages.
Oh, my. So many of them. And nobody speaks them.
Yes.
They're coming into the country.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, fun day so far. Hey, it's a Monday.
It was a big day.
Oh, my goodness. So the Supreme Court, and again, we're going to spend more time on this tomorrow when Lisa Graves is here. Do you know Lisa Graves?
I don't think I do. You told me that she was going to be on, but I don't think I'm familiar with her.
Lisa
so enlighten
is
me.
Awesome. First of all, she was a deputy assistant attorney general under both Janet Reno and Bill Clinton and John Ashcroft and W. So she was there during the whole hospital thing and all that. And she worked in the Senate Judiciary Committee under, I'm forgetting which senator, but on nominations. And she's got those legal bona fides. She used to run the Center for Media and Democracy, and they're the people who brought us Alec Exposed and taught us all about the Koch brothers. And now she runs an organization called True North Research, and she's pulling the curtain back behind around Leonard Leo and exposing his dark money nonsense. So Lisa is my go-to legal expert. So,
sure.
So perfect timing. She'll talk to us about this ruling that on the surface seems really, really bad. And I don't know if you heard about Keith Olbermann, your former colleague Keith Olbermann's response.
I just saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, talking about people peeing on themselves and that the Supreme Court must be dissolved. I hear, much like water will dissolve the Wicked Witch of the West, urine does that for errant Supreme Court justices.
Well, that would be an interesting science experiment, I guess.
It really would. Although I don't want to be around when it happens because, you know, splash. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hate to see the control group, too.
Oh, God, yeah. No, not fun. Again, you can report on it and we'll read about it afterwards at the fucking news. So you've been promising us for a little while now. At the fucking news, you did some reporting on this Alejandro Mayorkas impeachment, and you said, I've got some new original reporting coming, and it was delayed a couple of days because stuff happens, you know, shit happens. And but now it's out. In fact, I got three emails from the fucking news this morning. So first of all, why was Mayorkas impeached? What did he commit high crimes or misdemeanors? Did he do something that was an impeachable or an indictable offense?
Indictable. Well, it's kind of unfathomable that this happened, but there actually is an argument for it. It just happens to be a very, very bad argument. But the argument is twofold, right? There were two counts to the impeachment. One was that he failed to detain every single person that the Border Patrol encountered, which the law requires DHS to do.
Right.
So technically, in that narrow silo of interpretation, they are correct. He did not live up to the dictates of that law. And also, when he went before Congress, he testified that the border is secure. And I think I pointed out in the fucking news that he's guilty of doing what literally every single cabinet secretary from time immemorial has done, which is prioritize their resources in accordance with the policies of the administration, right? In law, right, it's known as prosecutorial discretion. You cannot do everything you're supposed to do. Why? Because Republicans don't fund government to the fullest. So you have to choose, what am I going to do? And it turns out I've got my reporting that's out today on the Mayorkas impeachment staff includes a reference to the Cato Institute finding that, I believe it was 52% in 2019 and 2020 of the people that were encountered by the Trump Border Patrol were released into the U.S.
That's unfathomable. So,
it's unfathomable. No matter how much you try to fathom,
you cannot.
And as no less than Jonathan Turley, who used to be on the Olbermann show,
he
used to be a regular guest and now is a Republican go-to, as he wrote for the Daily Beast a couple months ago, it is a settled matter of law, both in judicial decisions, but also in actual law itself. There's a law having to do with torts, the name escapes me, that essentially says, yeah, of course you can't sort of penalize these political appointees for not doing every single thing that the law requires.
Right.
Obviously you have to meet certain standards. You can't fail to like disclose records or whatever. But the goals for the agency, if they're not able to do every single one, that's clearly not an impeachable offense. And to be honest, I kind of would like to see the Senate hold the trial because I want people to understand this. And in the House, right, the impeachment, the majority was the Republicans, which meant they got to control the stage. Mm-hmm. And they've had a chance to put out the most robust case already. So in Schumer's defense, if they don't hold the trial, it's not like they're keeping something secret. The House has already had a full chance to say what it wanted to. But I do think it would be worthwhile having people see what a majority Democratic chamber would have to say and how it would respond to these charges. Now, you can make the case that the Senate's too busy to indulge this kind of thing, but
How? Because they're not, the House isn't passing any legislation other than to take away our rights. They're not passing any constructive legislation like to get shit done.
We've got these new spending bills that just they just put together this weekend. So
we've been waiting for a year, basically. Okay. So they do need to do that, but you know, in a normal functioning Congress, they're always taking up legislation. This Congress is not really. So they've got some time, but it is up to Chuck Schumer as the Senate Majority Leader as to whether or not he'll even hear this case.
I mean, I think it's up to the Democrats more broadly, but certainly if Schumer comes out and says, no, we're not doing a trial, you know, maybe Manchin or a couple others would break ranks, but probably not enough to actually force a trial. So I think there's the House managers of the prosecution are supposed to bring it over to the Senate. I think it's expected this week. So we should find out within pretty short order whether Schumer's actually going to allow a trial to proceed, which, you know, as I said, I think he should.
Now, remind me. So when Trump was impeached,
you got to narrow that down.
Okay, cool. Never mind.
Which time?
Both times. Nancy Pelosi was Speaker. Right. And was Mitch McConnell Majority Leader? And then we flipped it out when Trump lost.
I forget whether he was Majority Leader for the Ukraine impeachment, but I believe he was for the January 6th impeachment, I believe. But I could be wrong.
Yeah. I don't remember my, you know, long term loss of short term memory kind of thing. But
I'm pretty sure that McConnell kind of was in a position to make the case that, you know, it's too close to the end of the presidency anyway. Let the courts take care of it, which, of course, once it's in the court's case, now they're like, no, let the voters take care of it.
Right, right. And of course, there's now the Trump defense lawyers are saying, well, you can't bring criminal charges unless he's been impeached and convicted by the Senate. Yeah,
right.
When Mitch McConnell said, I have every belief that the court system will hold him accountable and he will not get away with any of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad he believed that. Boy, did you see him last week when he said he's stepping down?
I read that it was emotional, but I did not watch it.
Oh, it's not. I couldn't tell you what he said. I was just struck by his appearance. He is so gaunt, and the turtleneck was gaunt. He lost so much weight that he actually almost had a chin. Like, it was so gaunt. That's what struck me. Since he froze at the podium twice, I thought, all right, time for Mitch to go home. You know, like when you show that you're like Donald Trump, the clips, you know, like this, like this. Oh, it would help if
Venezuela. Did you just see Maduro? Venezuela. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah, when you display that, go home. And yet the New York Times only talks about Joe Biden being old and infirm and unable to complete a sentence. Have they heard that guy?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so back to Mayorkas. So I take us off. Okay, so, and by the way, I need to correct myself. I just got a fourth email from the fucking news because he sent another one out like since I went on the air.
Yes. Yeah. So this morning, just in case folks are considering subscribing, just know that
it's
not usually
like that.
Barrage.
No, right,
it's usually one a day. There's a newsletter. Today I had three stories that all summarize what I have found out about four of the top people involved in the Mayorkas impeachment. These are the four House staffers, the Homeland Security Committee staffers, who were the top people, the staff director, deputy staff director, deputy counsel, there was no lead counsel, deputy counsel, and lead investigator. So I looked at all four of these folks and and put what I found in the articles there. that I just sent out today.
Well, you've been working on this. So the one that just came in since the show began, I obviously haven't had a chance to read, but the headline, it piqued my interest because it says GOP's top Mayorkas investigator is Benghazi probe alum. Now, Benghazi was an interesting chapter in American history. Tragedy. Four Americans were killed at a CIA outpost in the middle of a war zone. CIA operatives generally know that they have a dangerous job. But the investigation that the Republicans built and then the hearings that were interminable, they never ended, led me to call it Benghazi Tourette's, because any time there was any question about anything, the Republicans would go, Benghazi! It was a form of Tourette's. And there was no there. It wasn't anybody's fault. It was, we're not going to relitigate Benghazi, but it was a tragedy. Four Americans died, and they went after Hillary Clinton as if she had gone there and shot them, executed them herself. And these hearings went on forever. So you're saying the Republicans' top Mayorkas investigator was part of that?
Yeah. The House Oversight and Accountability Committee was one of the first, just a month after the attacks in which four Americans were killed, to hold a hearing on this. And look, you know, there were certainly things that they spotlighted where you could say, oh, that's not good, or that policy could have been better, or that was a screw up, or whatever. It was all within, you know, government is not perfect, and it wouldn't be just to expect it always to be.
Right.
But it never, none of it ever rose to the level of criminality or even came close. And so I don't know. I can't say exactly what role the investigator, this guy named Sang Yi, had in the Benghazi probe. I do know that he can be seen, whenever you have the hearing members, the committee members up on the podium, you can see their staffers in the back, and you can see Sang Yi in the back behind then Congressman Jason Chaffetz. And I spoke to Kurt Bardella, who is a former Republican House staffer, who was actually a member, a staffer on that committee at the time. And I asked him, was Sang Yi one of the people like pushing for the committee to do this or be more aggressive or anything like that? I'm obviously paraphrasing a bit, but Kurt told me, he didn't remember because the guy was low level, but he said he was an eager beaver for anything that was thrown at him. The implication being that, of course he went along with the general tenor of the investigation and all of that. And what I found interesting about this guy in particular was he's also been a local politician in Fairfax, Virginia, whose public profile to Fairfax has for the most part been quite sort of anodyne and like immigrant friendly. He's an immigrant. His parents came here with him when he was a kid. So it's a very sort of like benign persona that he presented to his potential voters during his various, he served on, I think, the city council in Fairfax, ran for mayor, all this stuff. So that, of course, is very much in contradiction with the work that he did, whatever it was, with Benghazi, but also as the lead investigator going after
Mayorkas.
Yeah.
So that's a name, though, that most of us, unless you're really in the weeds, didn't know.
No one. But that's the interesting thing. I do want to make the bigger point that what was so interesting. So I found a number of things about these House staffers. One of them was a veteran of Stephen Miller's immigration team.
That was going to be the next one I was going to ask you about. That name we know, Stephen Miller.
Yeah, of course. And two others have gone through sort of like training sessions from groups that kind of inculcate this religious approach to government pretty explicitly. But the bigger point about all of them, right, the big pattern that I think drew me to this story, but also that I think people really need to pay attention to, is that the classic mode for a House staffer used to be you were an expert in the issue of the committee, of whatever committee you were on, or you were an expert in how the House works, getting stuff passed, adding amendments, killing amendments in conference, that kind of thing. you're seeing sort of a new breed now of House staffer, and it may be true in the Senate as well, that is coming out of these sort of theocratic, borderline Christian nationalist farm teams where they raise them and recruit them to advance that kind of thinking, which is a double-edged sword. One, that's a really bad approach to take to a secular government. Mm-hmm. But possibly the upside is, as a result, they seem to not be very good at what they are trying to do. Right?
Right.
Right. So the Mayorkas impeachment seems to have been revealed as a political facepalm, even sooner than some of their past efforts. And I think, you know, it's appropriate, and I'm kind of surprised that no one else has done this, to look at who are the staff actually putting this together, right? The chairman of the committee is Mark Green, Republican from Tennessee. He's not sitting there going through, you know, the DHS records or looking at Mayorkas's calendar log or anything like that. It's the staff. And so it matters who these folks are, how they're trained, what assumptions they come in with, what experiences, the values they bring to bear, all of that. And no one really looks at that. And that seems like a really important thing that people should be focusing on at a time when the Speaker of the House is as close as we've ever come to an outright, overt, proud Christian nationalist and has explicitly brought in theocratic values into the House of Representatives. Seems really important to know who are the people that are doing the work of these members.
Oh, very much so. So, I mean, are they religious zealots like the Speaker?
So I don't think that I can really make that definitive conclusion about any of the folks I looked at. But what I have done in this reporting, that's thefuckingnews.substack.com, you can go check it out, is I've been able to document based on emails and various disclosure forms that have to be filed, their associations with groups that are not only theocratic, but some, in the cases of some of them, there's a history of the group itself or its leaders basically being willing to embrace and amplify lies in order to damage their political opponents. So the deputy staff director, if I've got the title right, he, for instance, went on a trip to Guatemala that was paid for by the Guatemalan offshoot of the National Prayer Breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And that offshoot was very much at the nexus of the very successful efforts to amplify a lie about a UN anti-corruption task force, which the evangelical right-wing anti-LGBTQ president managed to kick out of the country with help from the family. So that's who this guy, the assistant staff director, is going on paid trips on their dime, that kind of
Lovely.
Thing. And so, yeah, there's like a host of different groups. There's a coalition consists of the American Accountability Foundation, the Heritage Foundation, and the Conservative Partnership Institute, all of which have, you know, varying theocratic histories and records. They did a boot camp for congressional investigators. And one of the people here in the Mayorkas case attended at least one of those, for instance. So it's important, I think, for people to understand this is where these people are coming from. This is who they've listened to. This is whose checks they've accepted to go on these retreats, on these trips. And this is whose training they are the product of.
You know, Rachel Maddow used to have a thing. It's okay if you're a Republican. This shows up everywhere you turn. I mean, even, you know, when we're talking about Benghazi, There was an incident when the orange guy was in office where four American soldiers were ambushed and killed in Niger. The Democrats could have blown that up. That could have been a Benghazi, but they're, you know, they didn't. But the Republicans, they will go for a year, more than a year, with these Benghazi hearings. It just goes on like that. I also got to mention, Jonathan, so you brought up the family and all that. There was another story this week that, that's related, where Mark Pocan, who is the former head of the Progressive Caucus, he's not anymore, but tell us, he asked the family for some answers. That what happened here?
Yeah, so just to give a little bit of background, back in, I think, December, I reported that the family, the folks behind the National Prayer Breakfast, they had paid for Congressman Mark Wahlberg of Michigan, Republican.
Wait, to okay, go... that Mark Wahlberg, that's not Marky Mark. There's an actual Mark
Wahlberg. I'm sorry, did I say Mark Wahlberg?
Because you did that last week, too, and I thought,
did I really?
Is there Marky Mark? And the,
oh, my God, who Tim Wahlberg.
Tim Wahlberg, okay.
So I'm so sorry. see, now what I should be doing is like attacking you for attacking the media,
right,
but I appreciate
course.
You correcting
right.
me. Tim Wahlberg, Mark Wahlberg, that's so funny. Anyway, so Tim Wahlberg was getting good vibrations from the Ugandan National Prayer Breakfast. Mm-hmm. He went to Uganda on the family's dime, and he gave a speech where he told Uganda, stand firm against international pressure, which of course was being applied because last year Uganda passed into law the Anti-Homosexuality Act, which includes the death penalty for aggravated homosexuality. So I reported this. And then in January, Pocan responded, cited my reporting, and he said to the family, he wrote to the chair, the woman who chairs the board of the Fellowship Foundation, which is their legal name. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to know where you stand on Uganda. I want to know details about your relationships with people and institutions and funding in Uganda. And he also said, I want information on your activities around the world. I want to know every country where you're funding stuff like this. I want to know every country where you've got a national prayer breakfast. And I want to know all of it by February 28th. On March 1st, he put out a press release where he revealed that the family had responded on the deadline with basically with a statement saying something like, we've never funded anything to hurt anyone. Thanks, Jesus loves you. Peace out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so Pocan was definitely not happy with that. He mm-hmm. sort of railed against, you know, what kind of an organization wouldn't take the opportunity to make clear that you oppose the death penalty for LGBTQ people. And the board chair's letter essentially said, you know, we can't control, just like you in Congress, we can't control everything that our friends say and do.
Oh, my God. Wow. Wow.
Which is true, but,
no,
but then they don't have to be your friends. You don't have to pay for them to go and do it.
Right.
And you can say, for the record, we agree. We disagree. And we think it's very, very bad for people to believe what our friend just said and did. You have all of those options. So
yeah, there is such thing as choice and free will. Right. you can say, no, that's wrong.
To me, what's really interesting is the question of, okay, so what happens now, right? Did Pocan really intend just to drop this once the family stiffed him?
If not,
what's the next step? And they don't have, since they're in the minority in Congress, Democrats don't have a lot of leverage. They don't have a lot of the official tools of power. But this is the first time that we have seen this kind of formal, right? Let's not forget, he may not be Progressive Caucus, but he is the chair of the Congressional Equality Caucus, which has a ton of people. And these press releases from Pocan, they came out under the banner of the Equality Caucus. So this is now a very big, powerful, broad caucus that is on record as saying, we have a problem with the National Prayer Breakfast, including the spinoff event that's now taking place on Capitol Hill. So the real question now is, what kind of groundwork was Pocan laying for future inquiries or you know, efforts to look into or deal with some of the family's activities here and around the world?
And hold that thought, because it's very likely that the Democrats will take back the House come November. I don't know about the Senate. The Senate may switch hands because the map is much better for Republicans than it is for the Democrats this year. But we'll see. I think a lot of the actions that the Republicans are taking are very unpopular. And you know, it all depends on us if we get out.
Note to self, don't vote against IVF rights.
No. I mean. Hello. Right? Yeah. It just goes without saying. It's unfathomable, if you will. So I want to go back to Stephen Miller for a minute, because of everything in Trump world, he might be the scariest. I really think he is evil. I think he's this evil force. I think there's more than a few screws loose in him, and he is a hateful, horrible example of a human being, excuse for a human being, and that he's inserted himself in this impeachment.
He has not. So let me make sure people, including you, understand this. And for folks at home, don't judge Nicole, because I just sent the story out before air. So it's not Nicole's fault. So the top lawyer on the Homeland Security Committee, which impeached Mayorkas, he is a veteran of the Stephen Miller's immigration team in the Trump White House.
Okay.
So there's no current connections that I'm aware of between him and Miller, or between Miller and the impeachment.
Okay.
The point of the story was just to document that the group American Oversight got these internal White House emails several years ago between the White House and the DOJ. And going through them, I found that the impeachment's top counsel, he's in there. He worked for the DOJ, but he was tasked to the White House. And Miller clearly valued the guy. He said, I want to make sure we keep him. And he said, he's a part of the immigration team. So I just wanted to establish that the top lawyer, right, the top lawyer on the impeachment committee knows full well what the Homeland Security Secretary under Trump did and did not do, and knows all about this stuff, and should have an understanding, therefore, of just how within the norms Mayorkas is. Trump himself did what Mayorkas was impeached for, which was claimed that the border was secure. And by the way, every cabinet secretary goes before Congress and says, I'm doing a great job.
Of course.
That's one of the impeachment counts against Mayorkas. So
gotcha.
The point wasn't to suggest that Miller is now pulling the strings on the impeachment. The point was to demonstrate, A, that this guy came from the hive that gave us a lot of really inhumane, unfathomable policies when it came to how we treat human beings who come to this country in desperate need.
And if Trump somehow, although it's unfathomable, if Trump were to get back into office, Stephen Miller would have a key role. He could even conceivably be Mayorkas' replacement.
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling. And look, it might turn out that Stephen Miller is a better alternative than some of the people that Project 25 has got waiting in the wings, right?
Now that's frightening.
Who knows?
Right.
Who
my
knows?
God, we don't.
And Trump has talked about, like, you know, deporting people at the drop of a hat.
That's right.
Which, by the way, I think people don't always appreciate. That's not just against a tool that can be leveraged against the people you imagine are undocumented immigrants. That's again, that can be leveraged against anyone who can't prove that they're not one, right? There have been cases of people who were born here, who were citizens and got deported because they couldn't prove it. So boom, you're gone. This is one of the things I try to emphasize all the time in the fucking news, is that any tool that people give the government to use against some group of people is now in their arsenal, they can and will use it against all of the people. There's no such thing as someone who's safe against a tool that they've given to the government to use against someone else.
Right.
Because even if they don't come for you specifically, there's no guarantee you won't get caught up in whatever dragnet they put out to grab all those people.
All the other people. You could be in the sights next. And and with Trump, you get what you pay for, people. You look at the man. Listen to what he says. Stop, kill your subscription to the New York Times. I'm done with them. Instead, subscribe to the fucking news. Thefuckingnews.substack.com. You get your news. You get it with a sense of humor and a lot of fucks. So what more could you ask for? Jonathan Larson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. What a way to kick off a week. And this is going to be a hell of a week, too. If they allow a State of the Union address to happen on Thursday. That's what Joni Ernst said was unfathomable, that they would let him deliver his State of the Union address if there's no border bill, which they wouldn't bring up for a vote. It's just, you know, it's
unfathomable.
There you go. Jonathan Larson, thank you. I'll see you next week. Tomorrow, Lisa Graves. She explains it all. So I just sit back and listen. Just soak it in. All right. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, listeners. See you tomorrow. Peace out.